From runasradio.com, you're listening to Run As Radio, the internet audio talk show for IT professionals with Richard Campbell. This is Brandon Nguyen announcing show number 561, Azure Service Fabric, with guest Mikkel Mork-Heinhoit, recorded Friday, November 17th, 2017. Run As Radio is produced each week by PWOP Productions, providing professional media and podcasting services online at pwop.com. You can follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/runasradio.
Thank you, Brandon. This is Richard Campbell, and thanks for listening to Run As Radio, another show coming from Connect in New York, and the best name ever. It's Mikkel Mork-Heinhoit?
Heinhoit.
Heinhoit.
There you go.
Like it's spelt.
Yep.
Is that Swedish?
Danish.
Danish.
So very close to Swedish.
Scandahoovian.
Scandahoovian. Yeah. The country with all the hygge in.
Yes.
Right.
Because it's got, that's a distinctive sound to it. And you work with the Azure Developer Experience and the Microsoft DevDiv, and you've been around Microsoft for a long time now. Since what, 2001, 2002?
Well, yeah, around Microsoft technology. I've been in Microsoft for the last 6 years.
Okay.
So, yep.
Yeah, it's a lot.
It is. And I'm actually in the Azure team now.
You're actually in the Azure team, so not DevDiv anymore.
I used to work in DevDiv. I actually used to do developer tooling for Azure.
Right.
Now I'm part of the Azure Compute team.
Nice.
And I have my main focus in Service Fabric.
And Service Fabric is one of those things, like we've heard it talked about, it makes a great slide.
Yeah.
Because it seems to be everything.
Yeah. It is. It's a lot of stuff. It really is.
This is something that Microsoft itself depends on.
Yes.
So, talk to us about this. So, what is Service Fabric all about?
At its core, it's a great orchestration platform for running high distributed, high scale applications reliably.
Okay. Across data centers, across the world kind of thing?
Yeah. Even that.
Mm-hmm.
So, well, the way that Microsoft relies on it is that we have a lot of the worldwide available and highly available services that actually runs in Azure are being run on Service Fabric.
Right. So, I have a show, you know, from the week before about Cosmos DB. Cosmos DB depends on Service Fabric?
Cosmos DB runs on Service Fabric.
Okay. Yeah. That's interesting to know, because that's their whole claim to fame is, so you didn't want to scale out your database, right? Your Mongo implementation or something. So, you simply flip over to Cosmos, and now you've got it anywhere in the world, geolocated, read from the nearest node, write to a common node, like all these capabilities.
Yes.
And so that, you know, takes that onus off of me. But underneath that, what are you guys doing? Like, how much of that just comes from Service Fabric?
So we're this thin layer that you can put on a set of VMs or machines, physical nodes, even Raspberry Pis, if that's what you want to do.
Containers?
Well, container comes above that.
Okay.
But let's get back to the container story. There's actually a dev story around containers as well, but that's sort of a different track.
We'll get there.
But it's this thin layer that you run across a set of nodes and you have a cluster.
Right.
And now you sort of hand it over to Service Fabric to make sure that what you want to, the workload you want to run in your cluster, being it any executable that you have, being it a container, or being it what we call reliable service, which is special kind of executables that sort of hook into the Service Fabric platform. Any of these, you can tell Service Fabric to run within that cluster.
Okay. So when you say reliable service, that's literally like at least two nodes kind of thing?
So that's just a specific kind of executable that adopts the programming language and our, you know, our SDK.
Okay.
So that you get to, from within the application that you write, you get to sort of hook into the Service Fabric platform and start influencing things like metrics for load balancing, provide health metrics to the underlying platform so Service Fabric can react on those kind of things.
What things you should measure and where you feed them to, what the rules are for your load balance that makes you happy.
Exactly.
Okay.
Stuff like that. So you could imagine a scenario where like you want to load balance your services, not necessarily based on CPU or memory consumption, but some other metrics that make sense in the world of your service in that domain.
And this is about lighting up additional instances.
It could be about scaling out. It could be about moving them around. It could be making sure that load is even across a set of nodes and things like that.
Cool.
You can do that if you have the need to.
Right. So like a configuration language, it basically said, if these conditions shift, if these conditions add more nodes.
Yeah, stuff like that you can build around your cluster.
Interesting.
But you can do that, but we do see most of our customers in many scenarios are most successful if they don't interfere with how Service Fabric would like to run your service.
Right. You know better than I do.
Exactly. Yeah. It will figure out how to run best and how to run things reliably.
Okay. Are we really in the pursuit of the 100% uptime type thing? Like, are there cost levels of reliability?
It all depends on the, well, of course, it depends on the reliability of your code.
Right.
I mean, we can't do a lot about that.
No.
But then there's the reliability of the underlying machines that you run your cluster across.
Right.
And you can so I said, you can deploy it anywhere. Like, mm-hmm. we have an easy way of running it within Azure, mm-hmm. where we do extra stuff about hooking into the underlying Azure infrastructure.
Right.
So, you know, we get to make sure that we run you, like, we actually place your virtual machines
on hardware that's working.
On hardware, well, yeah, of course, on hardware that's working, but also in a way so that we protect you from specific hardware issues that could happen in any Azure data center.
Right.
Things like that.
Yeah.
Now, but you can go and run these on your own service as well.
So Service Fabric is not just for Azure.
It's not. It's,
wow.
It's any 5 machines, or it could be fewer, but we recommend 5 for production workloads.
Okay. And it could be 5 Raspberry Pis.
Could be 5 Raspberry Pis. It could be 5 VMs in another cloud provider's data center. Could be 5 physical machines in your own data center.
Right. So this gets to this idea of cloud as architecture,
mm-hmm.
as much as cloud as product.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah, and apart from the choices of where to run it, we also support running either on Windows or Ubuntu.
Okay.
So even Linux, Windows workloads, we do all of these.
But specifically Ubuntu.
Specifically Ubuntu at this point in time for right. Linux. We're looking into enabling RHEL as well.
Right.
But yeah, so that's a point in time thing of where we are right now.
Well, I'm sure it continues to evolve, but it's an interesting idea because you have Azure Stack out there.
Yes.
So that's always been the thought of, okay, if I really want to have my own cloud architecture, I'll mm-hmm. buy Azure Stack. And it's just an extension of Azure. Effectively, I own it. It just appears in the portal, but Microsoft manages it for the most part. I'm sure Service Fabric runs on it as well.
Yes.
But this sounds like an even lower layer where it's like, I can pick hardware, my own gear, and run Service Fabric against it.
Yes.
And choose, you know, how things are going to behave.
Yeah. And it gives you more choice in the lights of other options for you.
Sure.
We have scenarios where people run Service Fabric clusters in disconnected environment and even on like ships, like
right.
vessels, right?
So not associated with Azure at all.
No, but they just need this reliable platform for a certain workload in whatever infrastructure is.
Mm-hmm.
But the good thing about this is that once you get your applications packed up, like, and you know, you need a set of manifest or declarations to run your applications. That's sort of the API of how you get things to run into Azure.
Right.
But once you get that packed up, wherever you have a Service Fabric cluster, you can bring your application there. So even scenarios where you want to run it in cloud and on-prem or different places.
Sure. This idea of bursting to the cloud or fail over to the cloud.
Exactly. Disaster recovery scenarios and
sure.
things like those.
Yeah. So you have that option to just go, okay, well, we're normally running on-prem. Oh, we're hitting saturation of load. Let's start shifting some of this load off to the cloud.
Yeah.
Let's shift all of it to the cloud.
Yeah.
Our data center's in crisis. Our backup strategy is the cloud. Shift all the workload over.
Yes.
Cool.
Yeah.
And just a nice battle-proven, maintained chunk of infrastructure code you don't need to own anymore.
Exactly.
So where do you control this from? Is this an Azure portal thing? If I'm totally on-prem with this, what does it look like?
So in the Azure integrated offering we have, it's mm-hmm. it's a bit more integrated in what you would do on-prem.
Right.
So there are Azure portal experiences around setting up and scaling your clusters and
right.
those kind of things. But there is a common API as well for Service Fabric wherever you run it. And to interact with that API, we provide CLI tooling,
right.
Cross-platform, we provide PowerShell for you.
Yeah.
And of course, we have the REST APIs, and we also provide some UI management thing we call the Service Fabric Explorer, which is basically just a web-based explorer to get insight into what's in your cluster, scale things, failover things,
right.
you know, all these kind of stuff.
So, and in the end, the Azure integrated experience is just calling into those API layers anyway.
Yes.
So, but you now have direct control of whatever you want when it's your gear.
Yeah, we want to give you a good experience of doing this in Azure.
Right.
But we also want to give you a unified experience.
I think that's the more important thing, actually.
And other places.
You don't want a trick that's in the UI in Azure that I don't have access to on-prem.
Exactly.
Yeah, so you want the same behavior in
yeah.
either case. Even though the UI may not be the same, the capabilities are the same.
Yes.
And in the end, if you're doing it on-prem, it should all be PowerShell anyway. In fact, it should all be PowerShell for everything. PowerShell, all the things.
PowerShell, all the things.
Yeah, yeah. No kidding. Oh. That's really interesting. So,
yeah.
I mean, it speaks to just how broad Service Fabric has gotten. As you see this as sort of a comprehensive strategy, if you're running anything that needs to be reliable, you should be looking at Service Fabric?
Well, there is of course, the entry point that if
right.
you want to run in production, you need at least 5 machines
yeah.
for us to have a reliable platform to run on.
What about the networking side of this?
Well, we need reliable network within those nodes because right. there is some traffic going on and there is communication about balancing and everything. We did talk a little bit about those things we call reliable services right. earlier. So what's also special about Service Fabric is that it's actually data aware mm-hmm. in the sense that we have a replication mechanism within the cluster. Mm-hmm. So if you go and store some state or some data into one of the nodes, it can be replicated without the cluster. So it's always accessible. And even if services move around, they can, you know, they have the data available locally
right.
to serve you there. So another, you know, another layer to the whole reliability and availability of what you run, but now with data as well.
Right.
And that's actually how Service Fabric itself works, which comes back to the requirement of 5 nodes running in production.
Right.
Like we have, I mean, a lot of the things we do in Service Fabric is really built around our experience of running things in Azure.
Right.
Like there are certain min bar of things you would have to do to actually claim that you do run reliable.
Right.
So that comes down to this, you know, we need at least 3 copies of the data we store. And the reason we get to 5 is if you have one node in down for upgrade because you need to upgrade the operating right. system or something else.
Now you're down to 4.
You are down to 4, so you can still afford having another node go down,
yeah.
but you still run reliably.
Right, you have a
failure. So, you know, so all of these things is sort of, you know, almost built into the platform in how we do things.
Mm-hmm.
Even when we do upgrades, we always do rolling upgrades. So right. let's say we have the 5 nodes in our cluster and we either need to upgrade Service Fabric itself, we need to upgrade the configuration of how it runs, or
right.
we need to upgrade an application running on top of it.
Mm-hmm.
We go one node at a time. We put in like, let's call them think times or whatever you want to call them.
Right.
You know, whenever we have upgraded one node, we go and monitor and make sure that your process and your application is actually running, that it's still healthy. And let's say after a 5-minute timeout, configurable value, we move on and start upgrading the next one.
Right.
And if through this upgrade, anything bad happens, we roll everything back to the previous version you had.
Now, when do you shift the workload over?
Depending on the different workloads you have, if it's just a, we call them stateless, so a workload that don't care about data,
right.
where each copy is sort of like a cattle,
yeah.
we take them down. So let's say you had like 2 instances running within a cluster and we need to upgrade them one by one.
Okay.
We move them over, we do the upgrade. So we make sure that they move around and you still have those instances of your applications running while we do the upgrade along the cluster.
Right. But I mean, I'm thinking about the 5 nodes.
Yeah.
You upgrade, you take one out of the pool, you yeah. upgrade it.
Yes.
You take the second one out of, you don't put the first one back in the pool.
We do. We put the first one back in the pool.
Back in the pool.
And then we monitor the cluster for a period of time.
Right.
I think it's like 15 minutes in a default.
Okay. So there's one node with a new version running on it.
Yes.
And it's part of the workload. So some people are seeing the new version, so to speak.
Yeah. So it requires you, and it also requires us, because that's how we upgrade Service Fabric. So mm-hmm. if you always have to like, you need 2 upgrades to break compatibility.
Right.
And again, you have to do these things to actually be able to run reliably.
Sure.
And that's our experience.
This isn't new to Service Fabric. If you were running without Service Fabric and trying to do rolling updates, you've got the same problem.
Exactly.
I mean, I've built systems, dealt with systems where we literally took one by one, leaving them out of the pool till we got to 50%, and then we flopped.
Yep.
Now move the workload across, then upgrade the rest.
Yeah.
So that everybody was on the old experience, and then everybody was on the new experience.
Yes.
But it's kind of an archaic approach. I mean, I'm talking about doing that in the 90s.
Yes.
When we did it that way. Today, it's much more expected that you simply move to the new workload is just incorporated in the process.
Exactly. And if you look at how, because when you run Service Fabric in Azure, the Service Fabric layer,
mm-hmm.
we upgrade that. And we do it fairly frequently.
Right.
But when we have to roll out a new version of Service Fabric across all the clusters that run in Azure,
mm-hmm.
it usually takes a week or two.
Really? So it's just happening steadily all
but
the
it's,
time?
Yeah, and it's a combination of the safe deployment process that we follow within Azure
mm-hmm.
and, you know, based on our experience of how what works and what doesn't work.
Yeah.
So we've actually started now incorporating that even in the blog posts. So we put out a blog post saying, hey, we started releasing a new version.
Right.
And a few weeks later, hey, we've done releasing the new version. And people are like, isn't that, you know, it's a strange thing. People have to like get used to that at how
the reality that it runs that long.
Yeah. But for us to go across all the clusters, across all the data centers, mm-hmm. across all the regions, across the globe.
And take nothing down in the process.
And don't take anything down in process, but keep you running, keep you reliable, and you get the new bits, you get the new features. That's how we do it. And it works.
Nice. So what is the load balancer in that equation? Is this all software driven stuff or do you have a hardware load? If it's your gear, like if do I have an F5 that I can command around? Or?
You can do that.
Right.
And it's very much up to what your workload demands.
Sure. Service Fabric understands that.
Well, so the individual services you would run into in your cluster,
mm-hmm.
they would be the ones that expose the endpoints that they would need.
Right.
So a common pattern when people build a service or an application on top of Service Fabric is that they also build some sort of gateway into the cluster.
Right.
So basically a small stateless service that takes care of the routing so that you don't leak that inner implementation of what's actually the different services in the cluster to any external client. But all the external client has to care about is contacting this gateway that actually runs in the cluster.
It does the rest.
And it does the rest within the cluster.
So normally it's a soft gateway, but it could be a hard gateway.
It could be a hard gateway.
That's true.
So concepts like naming resolution and service discovery that you might have heard in talking about other orchestrators, container orchestration, all of these things exist in Service Fabric and as part of that. And if you just want to bring container workloads to it, we can do that.
Mm-hmm.
So you can basically run anything you want.
Yeah, you have all the choice in the world.
Yeah.
Mikkel, give me one moment here to pay the bills. This episode of Run As Radio is brought to you by the Humanitarian Toolbox. Humanitarian Toolbox builds open source software for disaster relief organizations. One of our leading projects, called Already, focuses on getting volunteers into the right place at the right time. HTBox is deploying this application in the field in the first half of 2017, and they need your help. Go to htbox.org for more information or to make a tax-deductible donation. HTBox is a 501c3 U.S. registered charity. And we're back. You're listening to Run As Radio. I'm your host, Richard Campbell, here with Mikkel talking about Service Fabric, and we're here in New York at Connect. Just show's just about over. Been making a few shows and having some fun with it. So what's the failover detection strategy then? Like, how do you measure failure enough to pull something out of a cluster?
So Service Fabric has a concept of health events.
Okay.
So there are things that we monitor in our services and your services as well.
Mm-hmm.
And then Service Fabric can deem certain things unhealthy or in a warning state.
Right.
And that's basically how we react to those things.
And so it's actually up to us to say what state we feel that service is in.
Exactly. So let's take a scenario where you have an executable that's just a background worker, like a very simple scenario. And you go and you run that in Service Fabric.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what we would do is we would look at whether the process is up and running or not.
Right.
We know the process ID because we started it. So we do all the lifecycle management around your process.
Right.
If we, at one point in time, the process goes away, well, there's a failure event and we will try to bring that process up, your service up on one of the other nodes.
Right.
And if it keeps failing, if there's something with your service that doesn't work, it doesn't have the dependencies it needs, whatever that could be. At one point, we will, of course, stop trying.
Yeah, so you'll try a certain number of times and then quit.
Exactly. So in the situation where we need to move your service because either we need to take the host down for maintenance or we want to rebalance the cluster because we feel that, you know, the load is not right, we will go in and send your process events. Basically, it's a control C event. It's just an executable.
Right.
Depending on your workload, you either react to that or
you
don't care. You just go down and then we bring your executable up on any of the other nodes. The same with containers. If it was a container, we just shut down your containers and we move them around.
Will it light up additional nodes to fill up the cluster again?
You would have to provide additional nodes to the cluster.
Right.
So typically in Azure, what you do there is we integrate with virtual machine skill sets.
Mm-hmm.
So it's basically just a virtual machine model that you scale to, you know, an instance count of what you need.
Right.
Which makes up the cluster we run on top of. So the scaling mechanisms you can apply to virtual machine skill sets is what will then accrue to your Service Fabric cluster in that scenario.
So the five is five unique pieces of hardware. Right? Is that's the intent?
Yeah, virtual machines, right?
Yeah. Well, there are five VMs, but should they be five VMs on five physical boxes?
So the concept that we want you to apply is that when a node is part of a Service Fabric cluster, it sits in a matrix of what we call an upgrades and fault domains. So basically the upgrade domains is, you know, we upgrade a single upgrade domain at a time.
Right.
So let's say you had five nodes. Each of them would be in their separate upgrade domain, which is when we do the rolling upgrades. Let's say you had 10 nodes, but still five upgrade domains. We will actually upgrade two nodes at a time.
Right.
It's just the five, the upgrade domains that sort of makes that, you know, the rolling upgrade. The same way we have fault domains. And we use that to make sure that we run your services across fault domains.
Right. That would be lines of hardware.
Yeah. And that would be lines of, or even like, you know, a single rack tower with a specific power supply and networking. So like, let's say you want to have this 10-node cluster and you have two of your servers in one fault domain.
Right.
And you want to run two instances of your application. We spread them across upgrades and fault domains.
Nice.
So again.
So reliability is unique upgrade fault domain combinations.
Exactly.
Okay. That's really strong.
So that's how the fabric knows about that underlying infrastructure that it runs on.
Right? Does that get outside of the data center or is there a different structure when you want to get geolocated?
You can run across data center. It basically comes down to the latency and how much data you want to push over over those lines.
Sure.
As I said, the data replication that we need for the system to work could potentially then go through a, you know, data center to data center connection.
Mm-hmm.
And the way that the whole data replication stack works is that anything you commit to the data store needs to be in at least three copies throughout the cluster.
Right.
Before that transaction sort of ends. So if one of these copies is in a remote data center, you will get probably poor performance.
You're going to latency hit for it.
You're going to latency hit for that. So you need to be aware of those things if you design those kind of setups. Now, we have some customers that have scenarios where they do have a cluster running cross data centers.
Right.
But what they do is more of like a DR setup. So disaster recovery scenario.
Right.
So they run certain workloads primarily in the one data center.
Right. They're not really fetching any workloads from the backups.
No. So when an input potentially they have a disaster, they can light up these workloads in that other data center.
And they're more or less continuously synchronized.
Yes.
So that's normal.
Yeah.
And then at least that new site might be further away and a little more latent, but at least it's consistent.
Yeah.
It's not sort of random.
And it keeps your service up.
Yeah. And ultimately, that's the goal. But it sounds like normal is a cluster across multiple sets of hardware maintaining three sets of data,
mm-hmm.
probably in the same building or in at least the same immediate area.
Yes.
I mean, we might want separate racks, separate PowerPoints, separate AC channels. But if you're at that scale, what I like about this is because you're just defining the upgrade groups and upgrade domains and the fault domains, you don't actually have to get into all that really. You need to know what the hardware is, what the options mm-hmm. are, and you simply define it that way.
Yeah.
Are there templates for a lot of the configurations, like the sort of standards that I want to work from that
yeah.
come from Service Fabric?
Yeah, there are both. If you want to do deployments in Azure, we have lots of. So all deployments in Azure goes through the Azure Resource Manager
right.
or ARM. So there are templates out there for different configurations of Service Fabric clusters. And the same way when you do a standalone installation, so an installation which is not in Azure, there's
right.
simply a configuration manifest that you use when you set up your cluster that defines the placement of, you know, these nodes in the different fault and update domains. So you have to tell Service Fabric how that works. And of course, you can update that configuration at any point in time if you change the physical layout of things.
Sure.
And all of that. So that comes with the standalone installation package.
Right.
You get all these templates there.
Yeah. And I don't think you're ever going to just run five. You're probably going to run more.
Many scenarios
yeah.
you do. You can even have, you know, different nodes that you sort of reserve for specific scenarios. So we're working against also enabling you to do like mixed operating system clusters. So you say you had like a cluster with both Windows and Linux nodes in,
yeah.
then there might be some workloads, some Java or .NET Core workloads that could run on either of those.
Yes.
And there might be some workloads that can only run off one of the operating systems.
Right.
But you would be able to do all of that and define the different executable packages if they have to run on one of the, we call the node types.
Right.
Or the other node types. But node types could also just be networking configurations around nodes.
Mm-hmm.
So let's say you sort of reserve a set of nodes that have like that are publicly exposed, but then you also have a set of nodes that are not publicly reachable by network connectivity, but
right.
only between those types of nodes. So if you have these typical, you know, front and back end scenarios, you can even do that with front and back end cluster or node pools or
nice.
Node types within a cluster.
And then that also gives you nice security boundaries for a bunch of things. Right?
Exactly. It does. And you just tell Service Fabric where your services are allowed to run.
Right.
Or even if they have the run on the same node.
It sounds like something I could automate a lot extensively too, if I wanted to have self-provisioning for certain tasks. And
yeah.
There's any number of ways you could go with that.
Yeah. There are some interesting scenarios. Typically we see that around IoT or in, you know, when SaaS providers use our product.
Mm-hmm.
So imagine that you're a SaaS provider and you provide some online software service, and maybe you sell like different tiers of that. The way you would use the Service Fabric platform is that you go and deploy what we call an application, which is basically just a collection of executables or services. You can then put these application definitions into your cluster, and then you can provision new instances of them.
Right.
So imagine a scenario where you're a SaaS provider and you have this offering. The way that you could scale out in those scenarios is basically whenever a new customer comes along, you just give them a new set of executables.
Sure.
For their scenario, right? And then you can have like more or few of these, depending on the features you want to light up
right.
within that. And the same for IoT scenarios, where a new device just creates a new instance of a specific type of application that you already have in your cluster.
Right.
So those, you know, the provisioning scenarios and scaling scenarios can be automated in that way as well.
Yeah, you build your own cloud if you really want to.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And there is, I've got to think there's a certain number of people. It's like, why would I do any of this? Like, what are the kinds of workloads where you want this?
So if you have to build new applications and you look into distributed microservices
right.
architecture and, you know, little bit of cloud native or whatever you want to call it, stuff like that. The platform is really giving you all the tools and enablers you need to have like small services work together as a big application.
Right.
Where you get all these benefits of upgrading the individual services independently of the other ones.
You have some granular control over all
that. Yeah. And you get the rolling upgrade in all these scenarios where you have like large deployments and things like that.
But so that's definitely a scenario. You go to the container level and, you know, we sort of touched this earlier on where Service Fabric is still there. You're just not owning it now. You're running an Azure container service or something like that through Kubernetes. Mm-hmm. And you still do all these things. It's just that it's Kubernetes that's calling to the Service Fabric.
So Kubernetes and Service Fabric does a lot of the same things.
Okay.
They both do orchestration.
Right.
Kubernetes is orchestrating containers, where Service Fabric orchestrates containers and other stuff.
And other stuff.
Basically.
Service Fabric is a superset here.
It is, yeah. And it's because we provide you stuff for actually building applications on top of it in terms of programming languages.
Sure.
We give you the state support and we give you some other things.
Well, and I'm thinking in terms of I have existing software running in VMs that I want to migrate to the cloud, but I want to start taking advantage of the cloud without having to re-architect into containers.
Yeah. And that you can do if you don't want to go down a container route. Mm-hmm. We see some customers do that. You can simply just bring your executables into Service Fabric.
Right.
So that's the difference between what Kubernetes can do and what Service Fabric can do.
Sure.
Is that Service Fabric can orchestrate, well, basically anything. Whereas Kubernetes, you have to bring containers.
It has to be in containers.
Yes.
So I could even see it as an interim step, although you may never get off of that interim step.
Yeah. And that's the typical, like, questions we talk about greenfield development scenarios, like new things in brownfields. Brownfield is really brown. It's really like, there's a lot of ways, things you can do.
Yeah.
Because it often ends like most of the applications you have, you don't really want to invest in really modernizing them. You just want like ease of operation, more agility in how you operate.
Yeah. Keep it reliable, scalable, you know, all of that effective pain.
Yeah. And you can basically bring them as they are and run them in Service Fabric that way and get all those benefits without even knowing whether you at a certain point in time really want to modernize the code behind these things.
Decide that later.
Yeah.
Well, and I think at the simplest level, you could give it relatively little instructions and it's running as if it was just bare hardware, more or less. Mm-hmm. And then as you become aware of scaling issues or, you know, additional stressors or additional capabilities, you can start to implement more Service Fabric features to take advantage of that.
Yeah.
So I could also, sometimes you end up with these VMs that are pretty hefty. Like you can't light them up and tear them down very quickly.
Yeah.
So you got to be sensitive to that. You may actually judge to scale early just because you know it's going to take a few minutes to light that other VM and get it involved in the cluster.
Yeah.
But you have control.
Yeah.
I guess that's the sense I get from this is really about control of your destiny.
Yes.
I used to do this with F5s and Barracudas and you know, architecting our own load balance solutions and failover solutions and instrumentation. And you end up owning a lot of plumbing.
Yeah.
It's not an easy thing to do.
Yeah.
So I appreciate you guys are taking that on for us.
Well, you're welcome. Yeah. And I think we really strive to make sure that we give you an integrated platform and experience around this. Mm-hmm. So you don't have to go and, you know, pick a lot of different tools to get all this going.
Right.
There's sort of an integrated, like, little bit of prescriptive way, you can say.
Sure.
But with all the knots and handles, you would need to configure it for your specific use case scenario.
And again, whether on-premises or running in Azure, I mean, I like that symmetry that then, oh, we don't want to provision more hardware. The contract's coming up on this data center and, you know, we're going to be delayed a year. Can you move?
Yeah.
You can move.
Yes.
Right? You don't have to reinvent that architecture in a different cloud.
Yeah.
Anything else? Did I miss something important here, Michael?
No, I think one thing is that we are looking into taking even more away from you in terms of responsibilities,
right?
Which hopefully gives you more value.
Less to worry about.
Yeah. So we're looking into how we can provide a Service Fabric platform as a service.
Mm-hmm.
So we call it a managed Service Fabric in Azure, which basically means that you don't even see the nodes and your cluster. We take that away from you. So you just get this place where you go and provision your applications and we can run them reliably in the cloud for you. So you know, and give you all the scaling benefits and all those things that we just talked about.
And you're only paying for the VMs anyway.
Today, you're only paying for the VMs.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, it all depends on how many it lights, but the infrastructure that takes care of that, that's just included with the price of the VMs.
Yes.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
Well, Michael, thanks so much for coming on the show. I appreciate your insights.
Thanks for having me.
And we'll talk to you next time on Run As Radio.